We've had a fairly good look at the Ashwamedha, the horse sacrifice, but really particularly so, or focusing on the fact that it was his two wives, or particularly the one wife, the Lupi, who was the Naga, the snake princess, who through her mystical powers brought Arjuna back to life. But it was, as far as the great rishis were concerned, and the great Vyasa, and Krishna himself, the way out for Yudhishthira, with the thoughts he had of the enormous sin that had been created by the deaths of the vast number of combatants in the war. As far as the great sage Vyasa was concerned, there was no sin involved, but by taking this Ashwamedha, the sacrifice, it would wash them out completely. And Krishna, of course, was all for it, because as far as he was concerned, with Yudhishthira as the emperor of India, that part of the world, then he knew that with Yudhishthira and his brothers, the whole of that area would be righteously and religiously governed. But also from the political, practical point of view, it stamped Yudhishthira as being the emperor for that area. Everyone recognized it, because the basics, remember, of the Ashwamedha was a wandering horse was set out. It went to the various states and nations, followed by the conquering army, or the army was going to be the imperialistic army. And anyone who disagreed with the horse coming into the land would be fought. And if they were vanquished, they would become part of the empire and paid tribute to the conqueror. What Yudhishthira wanted was to retire to the forest, to have nothing to do with the ruling of an empire. But Krishna pointed out this was not his dharma, it wasn't the dharma of a kshatriya. And he pointed out to Yudhishthira that it was only through dharma that he, Yudhishthira, had conquered the earth and had regained his kingdom and was able to kill Duryodhana. So at this time, Yudhishthira with Dhritarashtra buried and did the last rites for the remaining warriors. He had suitable suitors, that was the half caste, the charioteer caste, and Brahmins choose a suitable horse. And it was determined that the sacrifice would take place at the full moon of the month of Chaitra. That would be, end of February, coming into March. Wealth or money was a big problem, because it takes an enormous amount of wealth to mount one of these sacrifices. And again, Vyasa had pointed out where money could be got from Mount Himalaya by asking permission of the local Brahmins who were looking after it. It was a vast wealth put aside by a king, Maruta, who had got the favour of Shiva in acquiring that wealth. In actual fact, what Vyasa said, he pointed out to Yudhishthira that he ought to give at least three times the stipend or fees to the various Brahmins and officials at the sacrifices, and generally give three times the amount in presents and what have you, because by giving so much extra wealth away at such a sacrifice, then you've got the proportionate amount of merit because of that. In other words, you get three times the merit because of the generosity. And in fact, Yudhishthira had really gone to town. They called it the gold horse sacrifice. Everything was gold. Plates of gold, cups of gold, and posts where the animals were tied to, because there were lots of sacrificial animals, not just the horse. Everything was gold. And of course, a vast area had to be constructed for all the Brahmins coming in, all the many, many kings and their entourages coming in. It was a major operation, and Yudhishthira put Bhima in charge of that. So while Arjuna, and he'd been appointed by Vyasa, was actually following the horse, remember he was doing it on foot, he wasn't doing it on chariot, he went on chariot, but he was actually fighting on foot against the various states. Bhima was left in charge of the security of the nation with Nakula. And as far as Arjuna's job was concerned, Yudhishthira had placed the pole pretty high, because he said when coming into a nation, challenging a nation, a nation who wanted to challenge Arjuna and his conquering armies, he shouldn't kill the generals, the kings and so forth without trying to negotiate first. In other words, give them a chance to actually agree to be subjugated, and don't just go in there because they refused the acceptance of subjugation and kill them all off. Of course, there's some sort of ceremony at the beginning. It was a piebald horse they had, and Yudhishthira was there. He had an antelope skin covering the top of him, and a sort of red silk draped cloth all over him, and of course a gold garland around his neck. And of course there were crowds everywhere, very hot and sticky and sweaty, because people brushing up against each other. And a lot of people actually couldn't see Arjuna or even see the horse. All they could do was actually see the top of the bow, Arjuna's bow, Gandhava, above the crowd. When they moved out, of course, the initial countries, he went north and then headed east and then did a sort of tour around India with all the nations within perimeter, so to speak. All the local ones were pretty friendly, but there were about three or maybe four major ones that would not be friendly, because simply the Pandavas and the conquering armies of the Kurus had killed their king or killed their general. The first problem nation was the Dragatas. You may remember them. They were the nation of the three castles, and it was they who tried to lure Arjuna away during the battle, what 12th day was it, to the north of the ground, Kurukshetra, whilst Drona and the other warriors surrounded and killed off Abhimanyu. In fact, the Trigata leaders took a do-or-die oath. In other words, they said, if we don't kill Arjuna, we will kill ourselves. And of course, they didn't kill Arjuna, so they themselves got killed. Another hostile state, an interesting one, was Pragyotisha. This was right up near Pakistan, on the northeastern boundary. And the king of Pragyotisha was called Bhagadatta, and he fought against the Pandavas, a very old man, and he had a remarkable elephant. He was really known through his element, well, I think that's right, through his elephant, Suprajika, and she was extraordinary, a real top fighting elephant, fully armored and so on. Anyway, he was a very old man, as I say. He's so wrinkled, in fact, that his eyelids would come down and cover his eyes. So he had to get a sort of silk bandana and put it around his head to keep his wrinkled skin up so he could see outside. And he had big, long, white, golden hair, remarkable figure. But his army was very much the leading army in elephant warfare, both on the defensive side and on the offensive side. His elephant during the war actually crushed Bhima's chariot. Bhima had a colossal fight with the elephant. He actually got underneath it. Bhima was very good in elephant warfare, and he whirled round with his club, crashing into the legs and feet of the elephant, and eventually vanquished it. But it was during the duel between Arjuna and Bhagadatta that the big problems occurred, because Bhagadatta was the owner of the Vajna Astra. And you could say that this was the most powerful astra of the celestial weaponry, more so than Narayana, because it's the actual fighting weapon of Vishnu himself, the most powerful of powerful weapons. And Bhagadatta had it, and Bhagadatta was going to hurl it at Arjuna. Not hurl it, he actually threw the mantra and put it through an arrow. And as the arrow whizzed towards Arjuna, quickly Krishna got up and stood in front of it. And it went into Krishna's chest and immediately broke into garland. Arjuna was a bit indignant that actually Krishna had come to fight, and he promised he wouldn't. But quickly Krishna pointed out that in fact no one could have stopped this astra but him, because of its enormous power. So you could say that it was Vishnu's weapon returning to Vishnu. Well, having tried to negotiate a peace and supplication of Bhagadatta's son, this was refused. They fought and he was killed. And on this final one, the Sindhus, it was probably the most difficult one that Arjuna came across, the nation. Remember, this was Joyadratta's nation, and Joyadratta had been killed in the night battle, and they were missing him badly. It was a very sad and sorrowful loss to the nation when he was killed by Arjuna. So when the horse with Arjuna on foot and the army came into the land of the Sindhus, they quickly attacked him. But these were the young sons, young warriors, and Arjuna initially was really quite, he didn't fight strongly at all, he fought quite weakly, but he perhaps misjudged and perhaps didn't, but very quickly they surrounded him, and they piled in the arrows at enormous speed into him. It was said it's rather like a tree with locusts coming at it, and quite quickly he got a very nasty arrow in his hand, to the extent that actually it lost strength, and Gandhava, his bow, slipped onto the ground, and the actual sleeve, the iguana sleeve that protected his hand, began to slip off too. And this is quite serious stuff, because there was an enormous groan from the heavens above. The rishis, the holy men, all watching, saw that this was no joke. The holy men started chanting, and the seven great rishis started to chant very quietly, but very seriously. And after a while, Arjuna, you could see he'd actually slumped forward a bit, but energy came back into him. And it wasn't too long before, in fact, he was back to full energy, and at enormous speed, the arrows were whizzing out towards the combatants, the young Sindhus. In fact, to the senior youngster there, he, with an arrow, knocked his head protector, his armour, and it flew through the air an enormous distance, very reminiscent of the head of Jayadrata on when Arjuna decapitated him, and to avoid the curse that would come into effect if the head had fallen on the ground, it was guided towards his father's lap, and of course when it hit the lap it exploded and so on. Anyway, it was not long before actually Arjuna was badly knocking him around, quite a few deaths. And at that stage, the news had got back to Dashala. Do you remember Dashala, the little girl who came out after the 100th son was born to Gandhari? She had, as you remember, married Jayadrata, and she was very tearful and very upset, rushing onto the field with a little kid in her arms. And she approached Arjuna, everyone stopped fighting, of course, and said, "I am Dashala, this is your great-grandson." In other words, it's Jayadrata. Jayadrata's great-grandson, my son, had actually died at the news of you coming in with the sacrificial horse onto our land. And of course Arjuna was very upset. He stopped fighting immediately, embraced her, and he really railed against the Kshatriya Dharma whereby this had to happen. And as he immediately stopped fighting, she told all the other warriors there to stop fighting too, and they did. And he said, "Well, if they can agree to the subjugation and actually paying tribute to Yudhishthira, and they should come along to the horse sacrifice." This they agreed, and after the partings, Arjuna went on. There was quite a few more kings yet he had to visit with the horse, but in the main he was now heading back towards Hastinapura. And about a month before he got back, he put the message through that he was on his way, and the message came, because they were delighted, Yudhishthira and the brothers and so forth. And he said, "You know, get things ready, but let's not have the mess up that we had at the Rajasura." Remember the Rajasura, when Yudhishthira was enthroned to the western part of the Kuru nations, and Shishupala, the king of the Chedi, was pretty outspoken with Krishna, and within a twinkling of eye, literally, Krishna had his discus out and Shishupala's head was dripping on the floor with blood. Well, if you have been, thanks for listening.